If they had only thought of the houses left vacant by those dead and gone people, if they had searched carefully for the facts of the lives of those people, they would have learned in what extreme ignorance and folly those dead people had passed their days, and how sadly their descendants are trying to follow them step by step. If those people, who are so much proud of their ancestors, and also you, take a careful account of human society, you will see that you often, unknowingly, trample on the skulls of the dead forefathers. You many times erect habitations and houses on the site of their graveyards. You usually enjoy the wealth and property left by them, and occupy the houses deserted by them. Even the days that lie between your times and theirs weep over your ignorance and folly. Those who have gone before you, and those who have reached their destination ahead of you, whom you remember so much and whom you are proud of, were those people who once commanded respect, controlled power, and handled wealth. Some of them might even have been kings, while others, it is granted, might have held high status and glory. But where are they now? They are passing through the depths of the barzakh, intervening time between death and resurrection. This very earth, which they once trampled on, has consumed them. It has sucked their blood, and it has eaten up their flesh and marrow. Having lost their growth and development, they are lying in graves like fossils or stones. They have so disappeared from amongst the society of living persons that any amount of search cannot find them. Dreadful misfortunes cannot now frighten them, and changes in circumstances do not worry them. Even earthquakes, which will shake their graves or throw their bodies out of those graves, do not worry them, and thunderbolts do not affect them. They are such absentees that nobody waits for them, and their very existence cannot be realized. Once they had their own companions, but they parted company with one another. Once some of them had loved others, but this love has disappeared now. Their indifference to their surroundings and their quietness is not merely due to any passage of time between their days and now, nor is due to distance of place, but the fact is that earth has made them to drink from a cup which has turned them deaf and dumb, which has taken away their hearing and speech, and which has turned their power of movement and sense of feeling into a motionless and senseless condition, a condition which made them look like persons sleeping soundly. They are such neighbors as never see one another. They are such friends as never meet one another. Their social connections have withered, and their brotherhood has come to an end. How near their graves are to one another, yet how apart they are. How close they were to one another when alive. Mothers, sons, fathers, daughters, brothers, husbands, and wives. Yet how distant they are now. Days and nights make no difference to them, and light and darkness have no effect upon them. Those who were virtuous and good in this world will have perpetual luminosity of divine light, and for the wicked and vicious, it is an eternal gloom and darkness. They saw the horrors of the next world and found them more horrible than they had feared. They also saw the blessings and favors reserved for the good and the pious, and found them far surpassing than what they could have imagined. Because the rewards or punishments which are served for good or bad people far excel and transcend the picture which human minds could make. Even if they had power to speak, they could not have found words to describe what they saw and felt. Though they are no more amongst you, and though even their signs, traces, and relics have disappeared, yet minds aided with correct conception and true vision can see and hear them. They speak not with voices and not in any living language, but they do speak out and say. Our smiling faces have deformed into mirthless laughs of gaping naked jaws. Out of our soft and delicate bodies, nothing is left but decayed and decaying bones. Our shrouds have fallen into tatters, and we are obliged to be confined to narrow graves. We have inherited nothing but wilderness and horrors. Even our silent abodes, graves, are crumbling down upon us. Along with our bodies, our personalities and individualities have also turned into dust. Our stay here, in the graves, is going to be a very long duration, and we have no power to get rid of them or to come out of them. If you peep at us through our graves, a sight will appear to your eyes, enough to give you a lesson about life and its end. You will see that worms have eaten into our eyes and ears, and their sockets are filled with dust. Our tongues have rotted. Our hearts have been eaten up. Each and every limb of our body has become food for animals and insects. And we are not in a position to ward off any mishap which falls upon our bodies. Nor there is anyone to come to our help or to feel sorry for our sad plight. This is what their graves and their skeletons are telling you. If you can only see with your mind's eyes, you will realize their sad condition. How their once living, acting, smiling, or weeping bodies are turned into dust. How their present condition is unchangeable. How it is impossible for them to retrace their way from this sorry condition. And how natural in all such cases has only one way to go, like one-way traffic, no going back. You will then learn how this earth has swallowed up all of its mighty kings and haughty queens, persons who during their times of glory did not know whether there were such things as sorrows and disappointments. Persons who always drowned their sorrows and worries in glittering cups of diversions, fresh pleasures and new pastimes. And all the time, their sole aim of life was to find new enjoyments and new sources of wealth to provide for those enjoyments. They were satisfied and happy with the world, and the world was busy in amusing them. When all of a sudden time changed, their attitude with them, their power and glory was gone. They found themselves nearing death. They were faced with the pains, anxieties, and fears. which were new to them. Their health gave way to various diseases. To ward off approaching death, they took to those medicines of which they were accustomed, with which they were always buoyed up, and which had kept them in good health. But those medicines which had once proved so effective not only failed to help them in that stage, but acted contrarily and increased the ailments which they were supposed to cure. Thus, a struggle between treatments and diseases started and continued, and diseases succeeded in a way as if the treatments were meant to enhance them, till the physicians found that the art of medicine could not help them now. The attendants, getting tired, started behaving negligently. The nurses and attendants were so tired and disgusted that they would not even describe the condition of the patient if anybody inquired of them. They also kept the patient in dark about his condition. They disagreed among themselves. Some of them were of opinion that the condition of the patient might be serious, but he was passing through a crisis and he would recover, while others held that he was fast sinking and could not recover, and his death was a matter of a day or a few hours. And then they tried to console one another. And all that time, the patient was wavering between life and death. He felt that he was to part company with his friends and relations. He felt that he was suffocating. He could only breathe in short gasps, and his mouth was getting dry. He could hear them speaking to him and lamenting over him. Some of those mourners were his dearest relatives, and some others were those whom he respected. He wanted to reply to them, to say them endearing words or cordial sentences. He wanted to tell them some very important things, but he could not. His tongue and lips failed to utter words, and his throat was choked, and thus the end arrived. Of course, the pangs of death are severe, and its agonies can neither be described nor imagined. Sermon 2:26. There is a verse in the Holy Quran: men whom transaction and business cannot divert from remembering Allah, keeping up their prayers and paying zakat. Surah Al-Nur 24:37. After reciting this verse, Imam Ali delivered the following sermon, in which he has spoken very highly of certain people who were neither prophets nor messengers, but were so virtuous and pious that they tried their best to lead people towards religion and truth. They received divine light, and secrets of creation were revealed to them. Then he praised those pious persons who always remember Allah. Verily, Allah has given His remembrance the honor and prestige of bringing divine light to human minds. With its help, those who are deaf to reasoning will be able to hear and understand His commands. Those who are blind to realities and truth will see and realize the good that religion teaches, and those who are behaving like enemies of Allah will become obedient and submissive. During every part of human history, and during the intervals between various prophets, there were men to whom He revealed secrets of creation in the form of wisdom, and as a result of deep and profound thinking. They hear divine secrets and see divine light. They inform the people of the greatness of Allah and advise them to remember the importance which He has bestowed upon period of life and to be afraid of His might and power. In the wilderness of life, they act as guides. They appreciate moderation in life and tell people that moderation leads to salvation. They do not favor fanaticism in religion or degeneration into infidelity. And they warn both kinds of people to avoid wavering and to be afraid of going astray, or else eternal damnation will be to their lot. On account of these attributes, they act as beacons in the gloom of ignorance and as guides in the maze of perplexities, doubts, and disbeliefs. There are certain pious persons who are so devoted to the Lord that they have preferred His remembrance to all worldly gains and glory. No trade, no business, and no worldly work can keep them away from it. No temptation of this world can stop them from remembering and worshipping Allah. They spend their lives with the never-ending thought of Allah, in words which clearly warn and admonish. They advise people against negligence of duty to man and Allah. They persuade others to follow the principles of equity and justice, and they themselves act according to these principles. They prevent people from vice or wickedness, and they themselves abstain from them. They lead such lives that though they are living in this world, yet they have served every connection with its wicked and vicious affairs for the sake of the hereafter, as if they have actually seen with their own eyes conditions of life after death, as if they know fully well what would happen during the long intervening period between death and resurrection, as if the day of judgment has fulfilled its promises with them. They are informing people of all these facts and are raising the curtains of mysteries hanging over them. They see what others cannot see, and they hear what others cannot hear. If you could only visualize their conditions when they take an account of their deeds and find their errors of commission and omission, when they feel that they are being crushed under the unbearable weight of their vices and sins, when they grieve over their sad plight and address one another in repentant tones, and when they beseech the merciful Allah to have mercy on them, to forgive them, and to help them to lead a virtuous life. When you see them in such conditions, you will feel that they really are beacons of divine light. They are surrounded by angels and endowed with contentment and peace. They have the doors of paradise opened up for them, and they are favored by Him with honor and glory. And it is a fact that Allah looks upon them with favor, is pleased with their deeds, efforts, and endeavors, and looks with favor at the position of honor and dignity assigned to them in His realm. He has granted their prayers and has pardoned their shortcomings. They feel that they need more of His mercy and kindness and are absolutely humble before His might and glory. Long periods of trials and sufferings in the cause of Allah have left them with tender hearts, and excessive sorrow about their sin has made their sights weak. They accept every lesson which carries them nearer to His realm. They beg of Him whose bounties know no limits, and from whose door no one has returned despondent or disappointed. For the sake of your own good, take an account of your deeds and thoughts. Judge yourself before you are judged, and before the day of judgment calls you up. 7:227. There is a verse in the Holy Quran which says, O man, what evil has deceived you about your gracious Lord? Surah Al-Infitr 82:6. In speaking about this verse, Imam Ali asks man two plain and simple questions. One, how can he be so ungrateful and disobedient to such a kind and benevolent Allah? Two, how can he be so careless of his own good? And then he tells him that actually speaking, this world does not entice him, but he runs after it madly. And when it sees his infatuation, it tries to captivate him. As a matter of fact, it has, as warnings placed before him, in the form of examples of sad end of those who went after it. Reciting the above verse, Imam Ali said, man of whom this question is asked is unable to reply. He is deceived and he is not in a position to plead for his foolishness, because he fell an easy prey to the temptations of this world. He did not use his common sense to realize where he was going and what he was doing. O man, what made you so bold as to commit sins? What beguiled you into forgetting your kind Lord? What made you accept your own damnation and be connected with it? Is there no remedy for your disease? Will you not wake up from your sleep? Have you no mercy over your soul, though you are so kind and merciful to others? How often it has happened in your life that you took pity upon others and went to their help and protection? You saw a man sitting in the burning glare of the sun, and pitying him, you gave him protection and shelter. You saw a person carrying with pain, and you felt sorry for him and went to his help. Is it not amazing that you do not feel as much sympathy with yourself as you do with others? What made you so unsympathetic towards yourself? Why are you so satisfied with your own sad plight, so careless about your own future, and so heedless of your own calamities? Have you wept so much over yourself, and succeeding sorrows have developed lethargic patience in you? Why this morbid carelessness, though you love yourself more than you love anybody else? I wonder why the thought of his punishment does not keep you awake during night, though you are so involved in sins and vices that you rightly deserve his punishment. Wake up! Come out of this sinful indifference and this criminal negligence for your own good. Make an effort to be good and virtuous. Steadfastly follow the path of truth and nobleness. Persevere in obeying Allah. Try constantly to keep his thought in your mind. Realize that he wants to draw you towards him. He is advancing towards you. His mercy and grace are advancing towards you. And you are arrogantly, impudently, and sinfully turning your face away from him. He invites you to earn his forgiveness and blessing. He overlooks and conceals your vices and sins. He wants to take you under His kindness and mercy. But you turn your face towards somebody else and away from Him. How sublime and noble is the Lord, that though He is omnipotent and mighty, yet so kind, benevolent and sympathetic, but you, with all your humility, weakness and helplessness, are so arrogant, ungrateful and degenerated that you commit vices and sins, though your very existence is dependent upon His grace, kindness and protection, and every requirement of your life is provided because of His blessings and benevolences. He did not debar you from His bounties and benevolences. He did not betray your weakness and infirmities. In every bounty that He created for you, for every one of your sins, which He concealed from the gauge of populace, or during any calamity and misfortune, He refrained from punishing you. You were not for a second out of the influence of His kindness and favor. In spite of all this, you keep on committing sins and vices. What then do you think of a being who is kind to you for all your sins and depravity? What would have been His attitudes towards you if only you had been faithful and obedient to Him? What blessings would He have not bestowed upon you? Think once again. Give a very careful consideration to your own case. Suppose there are two persons. Both are equal in power and might, and one of whom is you. Suppose the other person is kind, sympathetic, and gracious towards you to the extent of utmost tender-heartedness and love, and you behave towards him arrogantly, unfaithfully, and disloyally. In reply to his every kind service and benevolence, nothing comes out of you but rudeness, impudence, and depravity. In such a case, how would you have decided about yourself, and what verdict would you have passed against yourself? Be honest and impartial with yourself and think again, what would have been your decision? Let me tell you another fact. This vicious world not actually deceived and lured you, but you purposely went after it and allowed yourself to be lured and seduced by it. When it saw that you were attracted by it and were falling an easy prey to its blandishment, only then it decided to decoy and